Blog Talk Radio.
What up, Wu-Tang up in this joint. Wu-Tang forever. Wu-Tang. 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 Wu-Tang forever. Wu-Tang forever. Wu-Tang forever. The resurrect in your sector. From Shaolin to the holy city of Mecca. Yo, yo, assassination, vaccination, poor education, infatuation with Satan, world global nation, taxation, Bible outfit, microscopic, biological germ, bad child, burglar on the market, chaplain of your starship. I never departed once I started to explore these regions that was uncharted. Leave your heart broken, yo, I stand tall like buildings on Van Dyke or Mike. Beast strike like a noisy Fort Twain late night. Jace got New York for the life, we out of state. Can't smoke a bone in the staircase without getting chased. Pity candy poisonous rappers, best to chill to get your head gas. Lemon head, sour patch kids, best to grab a lifesaver. I drug wake ya, Boston Baker, then plant my sunflower seed on every square acre. The beauty of my nature shown through Sequoia of Mecca. When I make myself equality, known to my reflector. Stay in your place, and boy, and battle for your formula and cries. You pacify the lullaby from the black butterfly. This metamorphosis as the king takes his office. Keep my planets in orbit, never forfeit or quit. Move forward, I talk with the awkward slang. I walk with the Wu-Tang. Heavy doors can't be held down by the laws of gravity. Watch for the alarm of the temple trying to plot your tragedy. A gang rank with the hostages at the banquet. But attempting to hijack the Wu-Tang mansion under his blanket. Can't interpret cause your brain is short circuit. This dumbness left your body numbness. Try to come amongst us. What's your angle, rectangle or triangle? As my toothless square drains you of your power, the deaf angel tangles you like a weed token, a helpless flower. You cower, you feel the power of the final shower.
You still have the light in your eyes, huh? Praise God.
The original evil bastard, cutthroat warmonger, backstabber, betray your own mother. Your double tongue, double talk, cause you two-faced it. You triple six with a hiss like Satan. No good snake, you only speak lies. Slime bucket, scum of the universe, your eyes reveal that you have no soul and expose your true colors. I see you from 3 million miles away. You use a sneaky motherfucker, but you can't fool me. You not my bro, you not my sis. The devil doesn't have a skin color or complexion, so you not my brother, you not my sister. Yeah, your skin might be brown, but I know that you down with about 2 billion demons. Listen, stay the fuck away from me, or get killed for treason against the Most High. You might got these other people scared of you, but that shit don't fly. Over here, we laugh at you, but it's not a joke, 'cause people need to know about the black devil. Yeah, the real outcast. Your time is up, it's not the end of the world, it's the age of Aquarius. You's a deceiver, you got the whole world confused in a daze, like some rats in a maze. You's a shapeshifter, I don't care if you the Pope, the President or Prime Minister, King or Queen, Prince or Princess. You just frontin' for the public and you frontin' for the press, but behind closed doors, what really goes on is ritualistic, cannibalistic, sadistic, masochistic, some real sick shit. The most wicked there is that ever lived. Under the sun, the infamous Daywalker. The movie Blade, just metaphorical. Yes, the greatest trick that the devil ever pulled is convincing the world the devil don't exist. People have no clue. They looking for a red man with a pitchfork, but that's just not true. Some say it's the white man, but yo, I'm here to let you know you ain't know about the black devil.
Yeah, yo, peace, peace, God. Today's mathematics, God.
Yeah, science, man. Knowledge equality of all people, even though physically we not all equal. Erase the racism. The only thing I see when I look at a person is good or evil.
But the black man is God.
Yeah, that shit sound good, but that shit don't apply when you try and get a job. This is real world music, reality rap. We spend too many years on that fantasy crap. It's time we deal with the facts. And the fact is, you're not better than somebody 'cause the color of your skin. After 3 years in prison, and a white boy showed me more love than any of my so-called niggas. So you can go and vote your doctrine. The only thing that matters is you negative or positive, and you could go to hell even, where I'm sure you'll be fine with the rest of your kind. People are so blind, so deaf, so dumb, which proves you won the battle, but the war not done. You might got these other people fooled, but you can't fool we, 'cause we know that you a black devil.
Yeah, what's up, this is Prodigy. This is Mark D, the H&IC.
With Dr. Aline Bay show, and tonight the show is going to go into Black Devils, Boule, and Assassination, MLK. We did part one last week, and we're going to continue on with the information. Before we get started, I'm going to bring in my co-host. Brother L, are you here?
Yes, sir, brother. Peace, God.
All right, peace, God. Tonight we're going to get into it. But before we get into it, I want to say we got some announcements, and so I got to shout those out before we get into it. We got the cruise coming up. That's United Washington Tour cruise 2013, March 21st through the 25th. If you have not already got your reservations, I suggest that you do so. You definitely want to get that popping. All right, it's going to be the Royal Caribbean, Liberty Up the Sea. And for anyone who want to know the information, you can definitely call at 252-257-3588 or go to our website, www.draalimelbey.com. That's draalimelbey.com. And go to calendar and up-and-coming events. And you can find it on there. And this cruise to the pyramids, Cozumel, and we're going to try to get Chesanisa up in there, Cabal or Tulum, one of those. And it's going to be all-inclusive. So you definitely need to be there. There's no doubt about it. You need to be there. And for the reservation number is 1-800-465-3595. That's 3595. And the group ID, 688-4345. And the reservation name is Washita or El Bay. So you definitely want to get on that. Matter of fact, it's going to be even all the way up until March the 20th. If you need more time in order to get it in, as long as you get it in, as long as they got rooms, you can go. So check us out on that. As a matter of fact, we also got the Healing Wings Institute online courses in which they'll be going to Qigong, Tai Chi, Reiki, Pranic Healing, Reflexology, Acupressure, Tantra Kriya Yoga, Kundalini Yoga, Herbology, Herbalism, and much, much more. All dealing with the esoteric and metaphysical sciences and principles. And that is every Sunday and Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And for those who are interested, y'all can hit us up on our email at healingwingsonline@yahoo.com. That's healingwingsonline@yahoo.com. That's healingwingsonline@yahoo.com. And you can check us out there for those who are interested on the online courses. And we also have law classes, too, in which that is going to be every Monday and Thursday starting February the 7th. And y'all can definitely come on in on that. We're going to talk from everything from indigenous, aboriginal, title to history, constitution, amorality, equity, law, everything is going to be involved. So, right. So for those who are interested, definitely come on in and check that out. All right. So, let's get into this information. All right. We've been dealing with Martin Luther King, and we're going to get right on back up into it. All right. So, we know that Martin Luther King's family and his attorney, William F. Pepper, won a civil trial that found the United States agencies guilty in the wrongful death of Martin Luther King. And this trial was in 1999. And King's family issued forth a lawsuit against Lord Jowers, who was the owner of Jim's Grill, in which that was right around the corner from the Lorraine Motel, where Martin Luther King was assassinated at, as well as other unknown conspirators, all right? And it's the only trial ever conducted in the assassination of Dr. King. And the King's family and Mr. Pepper alleged that Dr. King's speech calling upon America to end the Vietnam War, which was called Beyond Vietnam, a time to break silence, and his plans for a 500,000 camp-in for Washington, D.C. in the summer of 1968 was a threat to dominant and fascist political factions within the United States government. And a matter of fact, if you get the book, Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community, it was written in 1967 by Dr. Martin Luther King. Matter of fact, it was his fourth book and his last book before his assassination. But Dr. King always been revolutionary in a sense, because he said freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed. And he wrote this in a letter from Birmingham Jail, April the 16th, 1963. Now, in his 1967 book, Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community, he states this, that these are revolutionary times, and all over the globe, men are revolting against old systems of exploitation and oppression. And out of the wombs of a frail world, new system of justice and equality are being born. The shirtless and barefoot people of the earth are raising up as never before. The people who sit or sat in darkness have seen a great light. We in the West must support these revolutions. Now, that was very revolutionary, you know, and so because of that, it was felt that he had underlying meanings, I guess, or ties to, I should say, to communism. And that was some of the principles on which that was always shouted out, you know, from individuals within government, such as the FBI head at the time, Gay Go Hoover. Now, August 19, 2003, there was an issue in the Final Call magazine, or newspaper, I should say, in which that actually would go down in history as one of the most controversial issues ever, in which that on the front page it stated, "Ye shall know the truth. SCLC, King's family seeks to set the record straight about King's assassination." Now, Eric Muhammad, who's the son of Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, and Donna Muhammad were the authors of this article, all right? And the focus of the story was on the 45th annual convention of the SCLC, which is the Southern Christian Leadership Convention, held earlier that month in August in Memphis, Tennessee, where King was assassinated at. Now, before that, on April 8th, 1998, I think it was Coretta Scott, Dexter King. Of course, you know that is Coretta Scott King, Martin Luther King's wife, and their son Dexter King, former congressman, Reverend Walter Fauntroy, and former United Nations ambassador, also former mayor of Atlanta, Georgia, Andrew Young, met with the U.S. Attorney General Janet Reno for nearly 3 hours. All right, and they demanded a new federal investigation into the King's assassination. This is how all of this got kicked off, based on the evidence that had come to their attention. And the family alleged that Reverend Jesse Jackson and Samuel Billy Cowell were involved in the assassination of Dr. King. Now, in an April 4th, 1997, Atlanta Constitution article, said that Fauntroy believed, now this is Walter Fauntroy, former congressman, he stated that Ray did not fire the shot that killed King and was part of a larger conspiracy that possibly involved federal law enforcement agencies. And he added, all right, and what's added was that Fauntroy said that he kept silent about his suspicion because of the fear for himself and his family. Now, Fauntroy stated that when he left Congress in 1991, he had the opportunity to read raw material that has never been seen before on the King assassination. Among that information, he learned that in 3 weeks before King's murder, the FBI chief, J. Edgar Hoover, held a series of meetings with persons involved with the CIA and military intelligence in the Phoenix operation in Southeast Asia. Fauntroy asked why and discovered that there have been Green Berets and military intelligence agents in Memphis when King was killed. And he asked the question, what were they there doing? All right, so we're going to get into that tonight. Matter of fact, Philip Millison, the author of the Merkin Conspiracy, he asked Memphis Police Department Inspector Sam Evans, commander of the units, why they was pulled back the morning on April 4th, in effect making the escape easier. And Evans said that he was given the orders at the request of the local pastor connected with King's party, Reverend Samuel Cowles. All right, you'll hear Cowell's name come up a lot as we break this information down. And William Pepper's book, Order to Kill, stated that Billy Cowell was a Memphis police informant. Sam Evans, the Memphis police inspector who we just talked about, confirms that Billy Cowell was one of their informants. All right, however, in Gerald Posner, in his book, The Killing of Dream, he stated that Reverend Billy Cowles was not an FBI informant, but William Pepper never stated that Cowles was an FBI informant, but a Memphis police informant, and that was verified by Samuel Evans, all right, who was the MPD inspector at that time period. All right, now, Jim Collum, all right, who had worked for the Intelligence Bureau, confirmed that on December 20th, 1994, that he had learned that Reverend Billy Kyle had been an informant during the years of 1967 through 1968. All right, now this information was revealed, you know, but we're going to get to that in a second here. Now, the final quote will print an article that stated that Jesse Jackson and Billy Kyle were involved in the assassination. But on the day that King was assassinated, a dinner was scheduled to take place at the home of Billy Cowles at 5 p.m. Now, he's supposed to be meeting with the invaders. Now, the invaders were a group in which they had patterned themselves after the Black Panther Party. All right? Now, for years, Kyle had claimed that he had been in Dr. King's room during the last hour of Dr. King's life. He lied. Jose Williams stated that this was false, and that during most of the afternoon until minutes right before Dr. King was assassinated, SCLC had a executive staff meeting. And since Kyle was not a member of SCLC, he wasn't at the meeting. All right, so it says that, as a matter of fact, Reverend Ralph Abernathy goes further and says that about Kyle's story. And matter of fact, Ralph was angry about it. And it says that if Billy Kyle said that, then Billy Kyle is a liar. And now Ralph said that Kyle had at no time been in the room with them. But Kyle did knock on the door of King and Abernathy's around the time of 5:51 p.m., 10 minutes right before the assassination at 6:01 p.m. And Kyle exchanged a few words with Dr. King, obviously about Dr. King wearing that tie. And it was alleged that it was Kyle who made sure that King had on his tie. And Steve Coakley breaks that information down. All right? Now, for those who don't know who Steve Coakley is, late salon, he passed on this past year. Matter of fact, I spoke with him about a week and a half prior to his death, and I was trying to get him on the radio show. That never transpired. But this is why we're dedicating this information to him tonight, you know, in order to get this out and, you know, come across as plainly as we possibly can about who was involved and who was these black devils involved in the death of Martin Luther King. All right, so it was alleged that it was Kyle who made sure that King had on his tie. All right. Nevertheless, Dr. King then closed the door and Kyle proceeded some distance north of the balcony. Right now, during the cross-examination of Billy Kyle and King's family legal team, they played a video news conference dated April the 3rd, 1998. Now, during this news conference, Kyle said, now y'all can go and see this, it's on YouTube. He was here and I was there talking about Martin Luther King. And only when I moved away so that they would have a clear shot, then the shot rung out. Now, hold up. Who's the they? To some, this was a Freudian slip. Along with other information that had caused some people to believe that Kyle was involved in the murder, and he was. There's no doubt about it. It was Billy Kyle who told the Memphis police that King did not need protection that day, April 4th, 1968, and that King would have his tie on. All right? Now, before Dr. King came off, came onto the balcony, Jesse Jackson had a conversation with Chauncey Etheridge in regards to Jesse not having on a tie. And Jesse Jackson replied, "Doc, talking about King, the requisites for eating supper is an appetite, not a tie." So Jesse was wearing brown trousers and a matching turtleneck, all right, the same turtleneck in which that he wore for 3 days with the blood smeared all over it for Martin Luther King. And we'll get to that in a minute. But he insisted that he did not need a tie, all right? So obviously between, obviously both of them, Kyle and Jackson, were at the 4:30 p.m. briefing from the 111 Military Intelligence Group, all right? And that the 20th Special Forces Group that had an 8-man sniper team at the assassination location on that day were instructed that the friendlies will not be wearing ties. And friendlies meant FBI informants or agents. Friendlies were not to be killed. So now we know who they were that Billy Cowell was referring to. But we're going to get deeper. We're going to do name the names. All right, so with the rest of the SCLC off at the hospital, Jesse became the media spokesman. And y'all can also see that on YouTube, too. All right? So it says that, this is what Jesse was saying, that the black people leader, our Moses, the once in 400 or 500 years a leader, have been taken from us by hatred and bitterness. Even as I stand at this hour, I cannot even allow hate to enter my heart at this time. For it was sickness, not meanness, that killed them. And then he goes on to say, some were in pandemonium, some were in shock, some were crying, hollering, oh God. And I immediately started running upstairs to where he was. And I caught his head, and I tried to feel his head. And I asked him, I said, Dr. King, do you hear me? Dr. King, do you hear me? And he didn't say anything, and I tried to hold his head. Now, this is what Jesse said. Now, of course, he was lying and trying to benefit off of the King legacy. And matter of fact, benefited so well till he became the head man after the death of Martin Luther King. And matter of fact, Andrew Young, as well as Hosea Williams, have both gone on record that Jesse Jackson dipped his hands in Martin Luther King's blood and smeared it onto his sweater or shirt, as we would say. And matter of fact, Andrew Young's, who actually was, you know, the SCLC executive director, went on to become a United States congressman, a United States ambassador of the United Nations, and mayor of Atlanta. All right. As we would see, he benefited greatly, you know, in that regard too. But what Andrew Young says, that the blood, the curling, were all things I read in the newspaper, and they were all mysteries to me. So the blood and the cradling were all things he read in the newspaper, and he said that they was mysteries to him. So he didn't know anything, you know, the blood and the cradling. He said basically the cradling thing didn't happen. That's basically what he was essentially saying. Now, King's chosen successor as leader of the SCLC, of course, was Reverend Ralph Abernathy. And Ralph Abernathy went on and says that Reverend Jesse Jackson would not say to me that he cradled Dr. King. I'm sure that Reverend Jackson would realize that I was the person who was on the balcony with Dr. King, and he did not leave, and I did not leave his side until he was pronounced dead at St. Joseph Hospital in Memphis. I am sure that he would not say to me that he even came near Dr. King after Doc was shot. All right, so as a matter of fact, not only is that the truth of the matter, it was actually Ralph Abernathy who actually held King, but someone did get close, and the first person out on the balcony, as you see on that famous picture of everyone pointing, you see Merrill McCullen over top of Dr. King, who's laying on the ground. You would see Andrew Young. You would see Jesse Jackson. And you would see the brother who called in last week. He said that it's his mother. But they was all pointing to where McCullen stated that the shot came from. But the shots actually came from the grassy knoll, or as we say, the bushes. All right, so, you know, a matter of fact, James Bevel, he said this was, who was responsible for bringing Jesse Jackson to the organization, had these words to say about Jesse's bloody shirt lie. Among the journalists who would later avail themselves of Bevel, Bevel actually speak about Jesse, this particular shirt. This is what he says. He says Jesse was like the to a prostitute and to lie about the crucifixion of a prophet within a race for the sake of one's own self grandizement was the most gruesome crime a man can commit. This is actually what James Bevel spoke about, that grandizement is what Jesse Jackson benefited from. As a matter of fact, according to Hosea Williams, Jesse Jackson told him on the night of the assassination that he was ill and he was going to Chicago to get medication. The next morning, Hosea and others saw Jesse Jackson on the NBC Today's show promoting himself with the bloody stained shirt that supposedly came from Jesse holding Dr. King. Now, mainstream media outlets such as Playboy, Time Magazine published articles promoting Jesse's bloody shirt lie and called him the heir apparent to Dr. King. According to Barbara Reynolds, at least 100 articles promoted Jesse and his bloody shirt lie. Matter of fact, 104. And attendance at Jesse's Operation Breadbasket memorial service increased from 400 the Saturday before King's assassination to 4,000 Saturday after Dr. King's assassination. And reporter Betty Washington noticed that Jesse tried to sound like Dr. King during the speech. Now, King was allegedly shot with a 30-06 and was in the room 306. Right, so that was that Masonic shit. Because we know that Martin Luther King was a Mason, and we know that Daniel Hoover was a Masonic Shriner. All right. However, according to the article, CNN, the James Earl rifle, James Earl Ray's rifle, did not fire the bullet that killed Martin Luther King Jr. It was in an article dated July 11th, 1997. Now, who was over that? Who was over the bullets? Well, check this out. It was amazing because Judge Joe Brown. And Judge Joe Brown said that that the bullets resembled a handgun. All right? Steve Coker stated that there was at least two gunshots in Martin's face. All right? Allegedly from three slugs. And hence the question arises, what was Jesse Jackson pulling out the tote bag when Ernestine Campbell saw him? Now, that's something else that we're going to get into. Right, but Joe Brown said that basically is that over the 2 years of the hearing on the rifle, testified that 67% of the bullets from his test did not match Ray's rifle, and he added that the unfired bullet found wrapped up in the blanket were different from the bullet taken from King's body, and therefore was different from lot of ammunition. Okay. This is what he said. He said, Brown said that this weapon literally cannot have hit the broadside of a barn. This is what he said about that 30-06 Remington 760 Game Master rifle. He said, in his opinion, that this is not the murder weapon. This is what Joe Brown said. Now, you can see Judge Joe Brown every day on TV. All right? So y'all take that shit up with him. Now, there was a witness named Betsy Brewer, the owner of the boarding house, could not identify the individual and refused to identify Ray as the man she had rented the room to. The other witness, Stephen's common-law wife, Grace, said she did get a good look at him and that it was definitely not James Earl Ray. Now, Grace's drunken husband became the referred witness, and Grace was committed to a mental institution. And according to her lawyer, C.M. Murphy, she was committed illegally. And after she was committed, the Memphis prosecutors removed her records from the hospital. And after years of imprisonment under heavy sedation, Grace still refused to recant her story. And in addition to Brewer, two other witnesses at the boarding house insist that the man who rented Ray's room looked nothing like James Earl Ray. This is where the character Raul comes in at. Now, Olivia Catlin saw a man in a checkered shirt come running out of the alley beside the building across from the Lorraine Motel. The man jumped into a green 1965 Chevrolet just as the police drove up behind him. Catlin said, "I will go into my grave saying that this was not Ray because the gentleman I saw was heavier than Ray." Catlin also testified that from her vantage point up the corner of Millbury and Hullen, she could see a fireman standing alone across the motel when the police drove up. She heard him say to the police, "The shot came from the clumps of bushes, indicating the heavy, overgrown, bushy area facing the Lorraine Motel and adjacent to Fire Station 2. Now, Earl Caldwell was in New York Times, a New York Times reporter, was in his room at the Lorraine Hotel at the time on the evening of April the 4th, and he said that he saw a man crouching in heavy part of the bushes across the street. All right. In a 1993 affidavit from former SCLC official James Orange that was read in the record, Orange said that on April the 4th, he noticed quite early that next morning, around 8 or 9 o'clock, that all the bushes on the hill was cut down and cleared up. It was as though the entire area of bushes from behind the rooming house had been cleared. The document, FBI document dated April the 13th, 1968, said that after King was shot, all right, when Solomon Jones, who was King's chauffeur in Memphis and also allegedly, what has been said that he was also a Memphis police informant, looked around Mulberry Street into the heavy bushy area, and he got a quick glimpse of a person with his back towards Mulberry, and this person was running rather fast. And he recalls that he believed he was wearing some sort of light-colored jacket with some sort of a hood or parka. Now, Maynard Stills, who in 1968 was a senior officer in the Memphis Sanitary Department or Sanitation Department, confirmed in his testimony that the bushes near the rooming house was cut down. At around 7 a.m. on April the 5th, Stills told the jury he received a call from the Memphis Police Department Inspector Sam Evans, all right? Now, we already mentioned him, requesting the assistance in clearing bushes and debris from a vacant lot in the vicinity of the assassination. And Stills identified the site as an area of overgrown bush and brush across from the Lorraine Hotel. Now, so this is where this shooting was carried out at, all right? Now, for King, April the 3rd, 1968 arrival, however, William was for the same reason not asked to form the special black bodyguard. Matter of fact, Williams was the one who was supposed to be his bodyguard, but they did not, they removed him, as a matter of fact. All right. If you get information, you'll find out more about him. And Leon Cohen, a retired New York police officer, testified that in 1968 he had become friendly with the Lorraine Motel owners, Walter Bailey. And on the morning after King's murder, Cohen spoke with a visible upset Bailey outside his office at the Lorraine. And Bailey told Cohen about a strange request that has been forced him to change King's room to the location where he was shot. Bailey explained that the night before King arrived, he had received a call from a member of King's group in Atlanta. All right, the caller, whom Bailey said he knew, but referred to him only by he, wanted the motel owner to change King's room. And Bailey said he was adamantly opposed to moving King, as instructed from a inner courtroom behind the motel office to an outside balcony room exposed to public view. Right? Now, this is the thing. 6 days before the King's assassination, the FBI was applying pressure to move him from the hotel in Rivermont, where he stayed, you know, on his last two Memphis visits to the fine Hotel Lorraine, where he was killed. Now, King co-worker Hosea Williams testified in the 1993 HBO television trial of James Earl Ray that when he arrived in with Dr. King on April the 3rd, they were looking forward to staying at the Rivermont Holiday Inn, and that he was surprised that when they was taken to the Lorraine Motel, he said that neither he nor anyone else in the entourage was familiar with the Lorraine, and no one understood why the change was made. All right? So now, Williams also goes on that Dr. King was initially given a room on the ground floor, but for some reason, the room was changed. Now, that ground floor room was room 202. Now, when Lorraine Bailey, who the hotel was named after, Walter Bailey was her husband, learned on April the 4th that Dr. King had just been shot on the balcony, she groaned, "Oh my God," and she suffered a stroke. And she never regained consciousness and died 5 days later at the same hotel, at the same hospital where King was taken, St. Joseph Hospital. All right, so who changed these rooms? Guess it was Reverend Billy Cowell. Changed the room from 202 to 306. And the owner of the Lorraine Motel, Walter Bailey, confirmed that. All right, so you can see this is the way in which that all this was working. Now, something else interesting that with these hotel rooms is that within room 315, 316, and is a question mark on the room 318, this is where the invaders were staying at. Once again, they were patting themselves after the Black Panthers, all right? And they was heavily armed, and this is the reason why they wanted them from out the hotel at the time, because they actually was there in order to protect Dr. King. All right? Now, who went to go check on these rooms? It was Jesse Jackson. On the night of April the 1st, 1968, the invaders had a meeting with Hosea Williams, James Bevel, Jesse Jackson, and James Orange to help their participation in the planning of the march with the invaders, with the march. And the invaders moved into room 315 and 316, located south of Dr. King's room on April the 3rd, 1968, all right, at the Lorraine Motel. All right, so since the invaders were short on money, the SCLC had agreed to pick up some of the, invaders' motel bill. Less than 30 minutes before Dr. King was assassinated, a strange event took place with the invader, Charles Izzy Harrington, who was one of the invaders, occupying room 315 and 316, further along with the balcony from Dr. King's room 306. Izzy said that around 5:45 or 5:50, all right, now remember, Cowles go to Dr. King's room at 5:51. Someone else goes to Izzy in the rooms, the invaders' rooms, around 5:45 or 5:50, right? And so it says a maid knocked on his door and told him that the invaders was going to have to leave the motel because Dr. King's group was no longer going to pay their bill, right? Now, when Izzy asked who had given her those instructions, she said Reverend Jesse Jackson. So Jesse Jackson is the one who did that, and also he went by and checked the rooms himself in order to make sure. Now this is the plot. This is what is going on. All right. So, Izzy, and the rest of the invaders gathered up their things and left. Some in Charles Cabbage Blue Mustang, others on foot. This explained the sudden departure recorded in in the log in which that they brought up in the case. Now, when we get more into this, you'll find that Merrill McCullen was part of the group of the invaders. He invaded their group, right? He was a Memphis Police Department agent working as a mole, you know what I'm saying, in the invaders group, who goes on to become a CIA agent. Okay? Now, Jesse Jackson is one of the Memphis police informants also. But prior to this, Jesse was groomed by the FBI as an informant since his days at A&T in Greensboro, North Carolina. All right? Jesse Jackson also brought Ernest Withers, another FBI informant who was with the civil rights photographer, into Dr. King's camp. Right? So there was a lot of informants around Dr. King. All right? Now, matter of fact, there was a United States Justice Department official. According to Marcus 3X, he says that this United States Justice Department official said that he had questions about Reverend Jesse Jackson, and that he examined Jesse Jackson's secret file locked up in the office. And he said he shouldn't be talking about this, but he leaned over and spoke in a very low voice. It was a stack of papers several feet high. And he added, impatient, I asked, so what, this is what Marcus said. He said, so what did it show? He confirmed that what I found out from other sources over the years, that Jesse had been an FBI informant most of his adult life. So he's a government freak. And so the guy goes on to tell him, the U.S. Department of Justice tells Marcus that my boss knew, I knew it, and he said, as he cuts off the discussion, he cuts off that discussion, and he said, absolutely. So that has been verified. But it goes on to say, subcommittee of the assassination devolved into the murder of President Kennedy and Dr. King, and that a staff member, basically, I guess you can say, speaks about the fact that Jesse Jackson was handpicked to replace Dr. King before King's assassination by the FBI. All right? And that Dr. King opposed the Vietnam War and was a threat to interfere with U.S. Foreign policies. And that's what happened. All right? And so this goes on in order to expose Messy Jesse, as Dr. Collin referred to him as. All right, so Martin Luther King first became a target of the FBI following the riots of Albany, Georgia, when the New York Times ran an article critical of the overt racism that the FBI was demonstrating. And King went on record as agreeing with that assessment. All right, that's when it got hot. But King, truthfully, was already being monitored at the age of 15. All right? When he graduated high school at the age of 15, he was already being, and graduated college at the age of 19. So he was already being monitored by the FBI, actually. All right? If you go get the COINTELPRO, or what is known as the Counterintelligence Program, Black Nationalist Hate Group, Racial Intelligence, is dated a month right before Dr. Martin Luther King's assassination. It was on March the 4th, 1968. It says, for maximum effectiveness of the COINTELPRO program and to prevent wasted efforts, it says, long-range goals are being set, prevent the coalition of militant Black Nationalist groups in unity. There is strength, a truest that is less valid for all that is triteness And it says, as evidence, all right, or as effective, excuse me, coalition by black national groups may be the first step towards a real Mau Mau, which is, of course, a black revolutionary army or from out of Kenya. But in America, and it says that the beginning of a true black revolution prevent the rise of a black messiah who could unify and electrify the militant black nationalist movements. And it says that Malcolm might have been such a messiah. He is the martyr of today, of the movement today. Martin Luther King, Stokely Carmichael, which of course is Kwame Ture, and Elijah Muhammad all aspire to this position. Elijah Muhammad is less of a threat because of his age. King could be a very real contender for this position, should be abandoned his supposed obedience to white's liberal doctrine, nonviolence, and embrace black nationalism. All right, and then of course, Carmichael, Stokely Carmichael, which is Kwame Ture, had the necessary charisma to be a real threat in this way. All right, and of course, you know, we know that he had to end up, you know, going to Africa. All right, and you know, so this, you know, it states within this particular document, of course you can read this, but it goes on further, said that these target members and the followers of the Student Nationalist Coordination Committee, which is called SNCC, of course the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, SCLC, Revolutionary Arm Action Movement, RAM, Nation of Islam, and of course emphasis was added. Officers handling these cases and those of Stokely Carmichael's of SNCC, Rat Brown of SNCC, Martin Luther King of SCLC, Maxwell Stanford of RAM, and Elijah Muhammad of the Nation of Islam should be alerted for the counterintelligence suggestions. J. Edgar Hoover. Now you can get this information from Brian Click, from his book, The War at Home, The Covert Action Against the United States Activists and What We Can Do About It. Right, that is definitely a book in which that we all need to be reading. You know. Now we're going over with Jesse, but of course we know Jesse basically is an extorter. He shakes down various businesses, you know, and that's how he gets his money. He's been doing that since the 70s. All right, since after the death of Martin Luther King, all right, as he's been put in that position, you know, how is it possible for a man who's never actually held position in a church, you know, as reverend, you know, never had a church, the organizations, you know, in which that he's part of or that he's supposedly formed, never gone into other major cities or became national. All right, only within basically in Chicago area, but yet he's a millionaire, multimillionaire. All right, there's some things in which that we had to ask about that question, you know, and asked about how did that happen? You know, never held the job, you know, in his day. You know, so good questions. Now, this is what Steve Coakley says about it. He said, further into the article, you'll find a section in which that Steve Coakley speaks about that 15 minutes before the assassination, a community group that was there to protect Dr. King was removed specifically at the request of Jesse Jackson. So he verifies that once again. Now, when we get more into this article, and different other information, because this is actually much research which they put together here. I'm dealing with this. All right, so we know about Jesse. As a fact, Jesse would not have been the top candidate or the heir apparent. He actually would have been six if that was the case. Ralph Abernathy would have been first, Andrew Young, Hosea Williams, James Bevel, James Orange, and then Jesse if that was the case. All right, for leadership and what is called the SCLC. Right, we going to that on that night, April the 3rd, 1968. Floyd Newsom, a black firefighter and civil rights activist, heard that King I've been to the mountaintop speech at the Mason Temple in Memphis that night. And on his return home, Newsom returned a phone, had a phone call from his lieutenant who told him that he was temporarily transferred effective April the 4th from Fire Station 2, which is right across the street from the Lorraine Hotel, to Fire Station 31. And Newsom testified that he was needed at the new station. Right, that's what happened. He said he was not needed at that station, and he needed to be at the at the other station. So that is what took place. There was another black firefighter at Fire Station 2, Novell Wallace, who testified that he received orders to be temporarily transferred to a fire station far removed from Lorraine Hotel. He was later told vaguely that he had been threatened. Right, and then in March, April probe, I think his name was Mike Venice, described a similar removal of Ed Reddits, a black Memphis Police Department detective from Fire Station 2, who did surveillance 2 hours before King's murder. And to understand that Reddick's incident, it was important to note that it was Reddick himself who initiated his watch on Dr. King from the fire house across the street. And Reddick testified that when King party and the police accommodating them arrived from the airport at the Lorraine Hotel on April the 3rd, he noticed something that was very unusual. When Inspector Don Smith, who was in charge of the security, told Reddick he could leave, and Reddick noticed that there was nobody else there. And in the past, when they was assigned to Dr. King, they would stay with him, and he saw nobody was with him. So he said he went down the street and asked the fire department could we come in and reserve from the red. And it says that because of giving, Riddick concern for King's safety, that's what that was all about, allegedly. That's what he said. And according to Officer Eli Arkins, who was there at the fire station too, took him to central headquarters. There, the police and the fire director Frank Hollisman, former FBI agent for 25 years, seven of them were supervised under J. Edgar Hoover's office. Ordered Riddick home. All right? So this is how Riddick ended up not being there, even though he had concerns about Martin Luther King and his safety. All right? Matter of fact, the former Memphis captain, Jerry Williams, followed Riddick from the witness stand and goes on to say that he was responsible for forming a special security unit of black officers whenever King came to Memphis. And that's the team in which that Reddick served on. Right? And Wayne goes on to say that he took pride in providing the best possible protection for Dr. King. But remember, they was told by King's party, so when King's party, not to have that protection that he would not need it. All right? And that came from the informant, Billy Cowles. Right now, in Memphis, there was an Alpha 184 team leader introduced Warren and Murphy to Lieutenant Eli Arkins of the Memphis Police Intelligence Bureau, and Arkins reported them that their sister was essential to save the city that Dr. King's forces were preparing to burn down. That's basically what that was stated. They then met up with the contact around 1 p.m., and Warren named him and said he believed he was a CIA agent. They was taken to their perch on top of the Illinois Central Railroad building, where they was assumed a state of readiness. In the course of the afternoon, the team leader put Warren on the radio with Memphis Police Inspector Sam. Sam Evans, who described the layout of the Lorraine, and he also advised them that the friendlies would not be wearing ties. The only government agent we have identified who was physically close to Dr. King at the time of the killing was Merrill McCullins, who was also not wearing a tie. All right. It was also known that Merrill McCullins was one of the first to reach King's fallen body. All right. And he's the one who basically told everyone to point, you know, towards the top of the building away from the bushes. All right. But we know that he was an undercover agent for the Memphis Police Department. All right. Matter of fact, this is verified by Mark Lane. Writer Mark Lane, as well as also Dick Gregory. As a matter of fact, it was codenamed Zorro, The Murder of Martin Luther King Jr., in a book from 1977. All right? It's also to note, interesting, that James Earl Ray was wearing a tie, although Raul, who they always like to make mention of, allegedly was not. All right, and of course, Raul, the son was Frank Sturgis, or either Jewel, Ron Kimball. All right, and based on reports, we know that Kimball was definitely in cahoots with the CIA, as he reports himself. You know, but Frank Sturgis is actually Raul, but we know that Kimball was definitely there on the scene, too. There was two men in which that James Earl Ray speaks about, in which that he met, or that was there around that time period. Immediately after Dr. King came up onto the balcony, Jesse Jackson cried out, our leader. And from Jesse's crying out, froze Dr. King on the balcony. You know, as possibly to use as a signal to let the assassins know that the target is in position to be shot. Not long after Jesse cried out, Dr. King, someone fired at least one shot that killed Dr. King. The first person to reach Dr. King was Ralph Abernathy, but the other one was Merrill McCullin, who was over the body in that famous picture. Ralph noticed Billy Cowell crying like a baby and told him to call for an ambulance. Kyle tried to use the phone, but he couldn't get in contact because, like we said, Lorraine Bailey, who was the, over the switchboard, she suffered a stroke or, a heart attack. You know, some say it was a stroke, some say it was a heart attack. You know, and as you can see, certain key people in the position could have been there possibly to prevent Dr. King from being killed. Was either told to leave the Lorraine Motel, or, you know what I'm saying? They was told to leave. No, and so in William Pepper's book, Orders to Kill, we're going to bring this issue back up about Jesse Jackson. Ernest Campbell, along with her husband, who owned the Trumpet Hotel located by the Lorraine Hotel, moments before and after Dr. King was shot, she made the following observation. Her attention was in a particularly drawn to Jesse Jackson, who she said had one foot on the first step of the stairway, looking up to the balcony while bent over, putting something in a suit bag. And Jesse Jackson looked startled when Ernestine Campbell noticed him putting something in a suit bag. What item could Jesse possibly be placing in the suit bag? Now, remember we said earlier that that according to Judge Joe Brown, that it looked like a handgun was used and that there was two holes, three slugs. All right? Now, my man, Steve Coakley, he goes in on that. And so what was the suit bag notice? You know, what was this suit bag noticed by Ernestine? Was this the same tote bag Don Rose noticed Jesse carrying around Chicago shortly after Dr. King's assassination? Okay? Now, Jesse Jackson was the first person to call Dr. King's wife to let her know about her husband being shot. By him being the first person to call Dr. King's wife, he would make himself appear innocent in the eyes of many, especially Dr. King's family. Now, however, Charles Cabbage, who was one of the invaders, said that he observed Reverend Jesse Jackson standing on the ground near the swimming pool, which was opposite the balcony room occupied by Dr. King and the invaders. He said that Reverend Jackson kept glancing impatiently at his watch. Now, in all fairness, they were supposed to, the invaders were supposed to meet at Reverend Kyle's home at 5 p.m. But anyway, it says that night in Memphis, after King's body has been taken away, of course we know that Jesse ended up getting on the cameras and speaking, as we said earlier. All right. As a matter of fact, it goes into this information here. Matter of fact, Steve Coakley said that that he had a cable show in Chicago back in the days where he exposed Jesse Rose in the King's assassination, and that Jesse lived in Chicago and that he saw the show. Steve Coakley stated that he was inspired by Al Sharpton's book, Go Tell It on the Mountain, where Sharpton stated, paraphrasing, Jesse Jackson was my preacher, was my teacher, excuse me, and Ralph Abernathy was jealous of Jesse, and it pissed me off. Right now, Steve talked about it on his cable TV show, and Steve brought it up, and Jesse called Al, telling him what Steve Coakley said. Now, all right, and now the amazing thing that even Steve Coakley, that even Jesse Jackson Jr. has stated to Steve that his father, Jesse Jackson Sr., will have to answer to these allegations. All right? Now we see Jesse Jackson Jr. also now with his own allegations, all right, and him having to leave being a member of Congress. Now, according to Ron Howell, activists said that without a doubt, Reverend Al Sharpton was also an FBI informant who tried to set up the recapture, what we call the FBI wanted escapee fugitive, Asada Shakur, all right, in 1983. So, you know, so it's informant after informant. All right. Nevertheless, it appears that Al Sharpton got in contact with Wyatt T. Walker, the SCLC field director, and tells Al to protect Coakley. And Wyatt further states that asks Jesse, how did he get out of Memphis on that night when the planes, buses, trains, and cars, etc., all modes of transportation were shut down? All right. And Dick Gregory told Steve Coakley that the FBI called the airport on that night asking Jesse to get out of town, telling others, those part of King's entourage, that, of course, he was sick, as we made mention of earlier. But Jesse, of course, we know he headed back to the next morning on Rockefeller's own NBC, Good Morning America, and he gets on there with his shirt and tell him that lie that he cradled Dr. King in his arms. But the crazy thing is that Jesse Jackson's wife, Jacqueline, said that he got in bed with that same bloody-ass shirt on that night. And other reports that he wore that shirt for at least 3 days afterwards. All right? Now, we know who J. Edgar Hoover is, all right? Or J. Edgar Hoover, Mr. Transvestite himself. And he started with a vicious rumor campaign against Martin Luther King. All right, and he was hiding the fact that he himself had African, so-called African blood or Moorish blood. All right, matter of fact, he had that descent on his father's side from the Mississippi Hoovers, and that he was very ashamed of his ancestry, post-traumatic slave disorder. All right, it was also indicated that Hoover was gay, was a cross-dresser, an extremely sick individual. Very sinister in the way he would go about targeting people and setting them up. Now, this is from the book, Official and Confidential Secret Life of J. Edgar Hoover by Anthony Summers. All right? And so, we know that, you know, this dude was sick. And that's the reason why he never had kicks. And he had to turn to homosexuality is because his children would possibly come out melanated. And so he did not want this to happen. All right. Now, regardless, Diego Hoover enlisted the mafia godfather, Carlos Marcellos. You know, gave him $1 million to do King. But the mafia was smart. They wouldn't use the Italians to do the murder for the feds. Matter of fact, in Double Cross by Sam Garcinia and Chuck Garcinia, Sam Garcinia states that we helped out Hoover many times cooling down that nigga Sean King. All right? That's what he said. It's in the book. So the mafia paid local police as hitmen for the federal target. All right, and we're going to get into who that actually was in a second. Matter of fact, Myron Billet was able to reveal that in January of 1968, that FBI and the CIA agents office, offered Marcellos, or the New York mafia leader, $1 million contract to kill Martin Luther King. And Myron Billet was a messenger or go-between the Chicago mafia don Sam Garcia. And in January 1968, Garcia asked Billet to make the arrangements for a very important meeting between New York mafia leader Carlos Gambino and some government representative. And Billet set up the meeting at the hotel in the Appalachian, New York, in the site of a 1980s mob summit. And it says that Billet said that at the meeting where he attended, the three representatives of the CIA and FBI asked Carlos Gambino if he would accept $1 million contract to assassinate Martin Luther King. And Billet recalled the exact words that Gambino applied: "In no way would I or the family get involved with you people again. You messed up the Cuba deal. You messed up the Kennedy deal." Right? And the CIA men said that they would make other arrangements and departed. Now, so we go into how they made other arrangements with other family members, as we said earlier, or just previously here. So this is all verified. All right, so we got the mob. We got the Black Devils, you know, Jesse Jackson, Billy Cowell, other informants, whether they was Memphis or whether they was FBI or CIA. We also have the military involvement. This was a serious conspiracy here. All right, and it says that after Dr. King was assassinated on April the 4th, Sam Garcinia gave Myron Billet $30,000 and told him to start running. They both knew too much, and they was going to be killed. Now, Garcinia was in fact murdered in his Chicago home in June 1975, just before he was scheduled to testify before the church committee concerning assassination plots. Right, Garcinia, he was shot 7 times in a circle around his mouth. In other words, keep your damn mouth closed. But regardless, let's name the names. It was the sharpshooter from the Memphis Police Department, Lieutenant named Earl Clark. All right? Who actually did the shooting. He was, matter of fact, Lloyd Giles, it was actually he and Lloyd Giles who was the two behind the bushes. If you get the January issue of Ebony Magazine, 1986, you would see them hiding behind. You would see them behind the bushes. Yes, you would see that yourself. Of course, now since I done told you, they probably gonna take that shit off the market. But going to get that shit right now. All right, is Ebony Magazine, January 1986. Martin Luther King is on the front, and it says the Living King. All right, so that's who actually did the killing. All right, that's actually who did the killing. Now, there was a 8-man assault team just in case, though. All right, military assault team or snipers just in case if Clark couldn't do it. They was going to handle it. Matter of fact, the testimony of writer Douglas Valentine filled in for the background of the man Caldwell Whedon, who was taken up to the fire station too. In Valentine's book, The Phoenix Program, 1990, he stated that in 1968, the Army 111th Military Intelligence Group kept King under 24-hour surveillance. His agents were in Memphis April 4th in an 8-man United States Army sniper team trained for weeks to use everything from K-bar, military Rambo knives to anti-tank rockets to terminate Dr. King. They practiced ambushing a moving car in a parking lot. The testimony on which jury David Maury later described as awesome was that of the former CIA operative Jack Terrell, a whistleblower in the Iran-Contra scam. Terrell testified by video that his close friend J.D. Hill had confessed to him that he had been a member of the Army sniper team in Memphis assigned to shoot an unknown target on April the 4th. Of course, we know who that is. And after training for a triangular shooting, the snipers were on their way into Memphis to take a position in a water tower and two buildings when their mission was suddenly canceled because Clark succeeded. All right, and it says Hill said he realized that what he learned of King's assassination that the next day that the team must have been part of a contingency plan to kill King if another shooter fell, and who was that shooter? Once again, was Clark. So now Fetcher Prouty was former Pentagon colonel and author of The Secret Team, was responsible for providing military support for CIA covert operations in the 1960s. All right, so this is where this joint effort came from, naming everyone who was involved in that. Of course, it goes deeper. There's more involved, but we got the main characters. All right? Now, we're going to go to the phone lines here. I'm going to bring in my co-host. Brother L, you here?
Peace, God.
All right, peace, God. Hold on a second. We're going to bring in caller 561. Caller 561, you're on the line.
Hotep. You know
what
it is. Peace,
man.
Peace.
Hotep,
bro. Yeah, Hotep. You know, I've been listening to this whole thing. Doc, you've been going in. You've been going in since day one. You know, and I had a few things to just put out there. You know, how you was mentioning that Dr. King was under surveillance since 15 years old.
Right.
You know, and what a lot of people got to realize, that the same way Hitler had his smooth sails, you know, guide him through his journeys, the same way these CIA agents and so forth have been watching and waiting on Dr. King to come out, you know, from the backdrop. So they already was waiting on him.
Right. No doubt.
How you was talking about the what his name is, Jesse Jackson,
right,
was like the infiltrator.
Right.
You know, how else could red ants go into a black ant bed?
Right.
You know, the red ants never can infiltrate the black ant bed. They always got to use the black ants to get in and infiltrate the, you know, the whole thing.
The body.
So, I mean, this thing been going on for God knows how long it's been going on. It's just been going on and going on and going on. You know, I actually was looking at the whole thing on YouTube, how how the CIA was setting up this whole thing with the Black Panthers, Dr. King. I mean, this thing been going on for so long. that we haven't caught on to their system. They haven't even changed the system. They just improved it.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
I mean, what's going on with us, you know? We need to stop taking the dump pill and get on some real shit out here, because they're going to continue to use the same system over and over and over.
Right, because if it's not broke, don't fix it, and that's their motto. So that's what they do. They do the same tricks over and over again. You know,
exactly.
That's how Dr. Khaled was able to bypass his first assassination attempt back in 1993, 94. I think it was around that time was when Jane Edward Best tried to do him, you know, and Dr. Khaled survived that. You know what I'm saying? Now, he didn't survive the one by 10 years later in 2003, but he definitely survived that one, you know what I'm saying? So, we definitely got to look at all of this. You know, it makes no sense at all. You know, it really makes no sense. You know, that we keep falling for the same gimmicks. You know, but in that book in which I was talking about by Brian Click, War at Home, we all need to get that book, because there's ways in which that we can definitely avoid their technology.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, there should be a textbook on this shit.
Right.
You know, like, how to counteract it.
That's the book in which that we're talking about. Definitely get that book, Brian Click, War at Home. Want that. It speaks about the covert war in which that the COINTELPRO waged against, these black nationalist groups. So you definitely want to get that.
They supposed to have to shut down this, this whole system back in the 90s. Remember that?
Right.
But someone was saying that why would they shut down a system that works?
Right.
They're just like you saying that you're going to go and sell a car that still drives fine for you. You know, it gets you from point A to point B. You know, the wise man won't sell it.
Right.
You know, I mean, you saying Brian Click?
Right, Brian Click.
Brian
Click. GLICK.
GLICK. Okay. All right.
Bro, I appreciate you. Let me go to these other callers. Peace, bro.
Peace.
All right. We got area code 773. Area code 773 on the line. Peace. 773. Area code 773. You on the line. All right. We're going to go to area code 347. Area code 347. Peace.
Peace.
347. You here?
Oh, good night, Dr. Day. Thank you. This is Deborah.
Yes.
Are you ready for the interview with Dr. Gant? He's on 7-3.
What is his number?
It's the area code 773.
I just answered for him and no one answered. Hold on. All right, area code 757, you're on the line.
Peace. Yeah, peace to the gods. Yeah, I just wanted to add on. excuse me, I just came in kind of late, but I heard that you was going in on the King assassination, and I was peeping out the show, the last one that you had did on the assassination. I just wanted to add on to what you was building on, and basically. Some info that I had came across was, I don't know if you're familiar with the guy, you know who the chick was in the Black Panthers, Elaine Brown, you heard of her?
Yeah, we know Elaine Brown, yeah.
Yeah, so in the book she wrote, she talked about the guy, the white boy in the CIA that she was involved with.
Right.
J. Richard Kennedy or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked him up, and what I found was that he was actually a high-placed contact in King's camp initially.
Right.
And so, and when King started to make that transition more so, you know, to our side of thinking, you know, started, you know, talking to El Malik Shabazz, you know, Malcolm.
Right. He definitely got away from the Boulé influence, you know, because the Boulé
right.
is nothing more than the buffer or the advisor to the kings between the grassroots movement and the so-called elite or Illuminati. So, you know,
yeah.
they patted themselves after the Skull and Bone Society, and you can get that information from Charles Wesley's book on Sigma Pi Phi, in which that is, you know, which is the Boulé, you know, in which that they definitely patted themselves after the Skull and Bones, which is the second chapter of the Illuminati. So there's no doubt
right.
about that from off of Yale's campus. So once he moved away from that philosophy, just like W. Boyce moved away from it and became more, you know, more of a nationalist or more pan-Africanist in their perspective, you know, this is what happens.
Right, yeah, exactly. So when he started making that transition, this guy that was already inside of his camp, from what I was reading, he started to report back to the CIA and Hoover that King was becoming communist, and therefore they documented and listed him as a threat to national security. So I'm thinking that this was basically like what they were going to say if they were caught and being implicated in setting up his assassination. They were kind of like basically trying to make a paper trail to say, well, he was about to be communist. He was about to be a threat to national security. But basically,
yeah.
this was like the I think the impetus for them starting to plot out his murder with this guy Kennedy and also Elaine Brown, which I had mentioned earlier. She was actually the reason the Panthers were brought down.
Right.
And you had mentioned, you had talked about Bunchy Carter and Huggins,
right.
John Huggins' murder on UCLA campus. And what I read was that she actually, what she did, like she slapped one of the members of the US organization and ran back to the room where Bunchy Carter
yep.
and John Huggins was at.
Yep.
And told them that they assaulted her,
yep.
and then when they confronted the two US organization, that's when they were shot.
That's
and,
right.
Yeah, mm. yeah. So she was actually a plant into the organization by the CIA. She was mind control.
Exactly, Manchurian candidate.
Yeah.
They all over
right.
man. And that's the whole
yeah.
point of us going back into this in detail. Don't worry, we're going to get to the Black Panthers. I want you back on for that show, so you make sure you back on. We're going to get into Malcolm X. You know, we're going to go into his next month, because that's when he got murdered, was next, you know, in the month of February. Matter of fact, February the 21st, 5 days before, Savior's Day of the Nation of Islam. So we're going to go into that. And, of course, we're going to get into the Black Panthers probably in March. You know what I'm saying? So we're going to hit them up. You know, we're going to go through the whole assassination of these black devils and their whole roles, you know,
yeah.
in these particular cases.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I definitely got to be on for the Panther show.
Yes, sir.
There's a lot of info that, like, I don't think, you know, most of us really have touched on with the Panthers and you know, and what they were trying to do and what was done to them. And, yeah, it's real deep.
It is. It is, no doubt about it. So I definitely want you on for that. So if you got my number, 252-257-3588, give me a call and we can go over some things and, you know, we can put it together.
Oh, yeah, that's what's up. Yeah, I'm going to get at you, bro.
And I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm just going to be on listening, bro.
All right, peace.
All right, peace. Bro.
All right. What we're going to do right now is going to go into the second half of the information. be basically, I guess you can say, be finished up the King assassination. If there's any more questions, we can stay on. We're going to go on probably till 11 o'clock tonight. So everybody stay on. Matter of fact, call into the number 626-414-5581 in the chat room that want to continue listening. Call in 626-414-3535. Once again, that's 626-414-3535. All right. Peace.
Peace.
Peace. Peace. Ayashate Washington Ish.
Ayashate Washington Ish.
Peace to the north.
Peace.
Yeah. From me doing my investigation and research, everything is not a coincidence or an accident. Dealing with a book that was actually done by a brother was speaking about the story of Martin Luther King, about how he was with the American Communist Party at one time.
Right.
You know, and what most people don't know is before he came affiliated, was put up front to become the front man for the NAACP in the civil rights movement. His brother, who was also a minister, he was the one who actually was like the one that had the power. But by Martin Luther King being more educated, more articulate in his speech, then that's when they went head on and went with him. But also at the same time, you know, most people forgot that he was also a part of Alpha Phi Alpha, and he was also a part of the Sigma Pi Phi, you know, which was
right,
too late.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So dealing with all these information that you actually bringing up front and up forth, you know, I remember I put on Facebook about how the NAACP was actually founded by the Jews.
That's
you
right.
See? So by their hand being inside that, you really have to ask yourself, where are they getting all these money to finance themselves while this is going on?
Right.
So this may not have been a coincidence or accident, just like Brother Stevie Coakley had put out there, who I think got assassinated from him putting out the information. You
yeah,
know?
Well, he told me a week and a half before he passed. As a matter of fact, I talked to him several times within those 2 weeks passed, and he told me that, brother, man, they almost got me, brother. He said when I was in the hospital, they almost got me.
Yeah.
He was telling
me
that.
Yeah.
Personally.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so he felt, you know what I'm saying, like they was after him and they was trying to get him. And then no more than a week and a half later, you know what I'm saying, he was gone.
And also, what most people don't know is that the speech that Martin Luther King had gave on that I Have a Dream speech, he did not write that speech.
Right.
It was some brothers who wrote it, because when he spoke, he actually said that the Negro was exiled in his own land. And that was the key right there, where most people didn't even much pick it up, that we who are considered as Negroes was already home in this land.
Exactly.
And that was a big major key, you see. And
that's funny that was the same key in which that Malcolm soon found out when he went to Africa. And, you know, he was told that this land was ours too. So
right.
So it's funny that they both found out in their last, you know, in their last few years of life, is that the land went to us.
Maybe they got killed because they're going to start teaching about birthright and national law, nationality and birthright.
Well, it's possible.
Well,
there was three chapters that was left out of the Alex Haley autobiography of Malcolm X, in which that is within Manning Marble's book. You know, which that I suggest everybody get, and which that goes into it. But go ahead, Brother Paul.
Yeah, but, you know, it's amazing how the information is coming out when you had Malik El-Shabazz getting assassinated, Martin Luther King. Well, most people don't even much know that Martin Luther King wasn't even much his name at that time, you know. His name was Michael, but he changed
Michael King
his name.
Jr., that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, most people don't even much know that. And then you had John F. Kennedy, who actually put his hand inside of the mafia when they started taxing the mafia. And it was like trying to tell his daddy, because his daddy was running moonshine and all that. They said, hey, tell your boy,
exactly.
Don't touch us. You know what I'm saying? And then that's
right.
You had the rest of the other Kennedys. Now, the thing is about that, John F. Kennedy, he was in the Knights of Columbus. Most people don't know that. So it was certain things that had to be done, which was ordered by him by the Roman Catholic Church not to do. You see, it is not a coincidence or an accident. Here you have Joe Biden, who is the vice president of the corporation, who is a Catholic, right? And then, I mean, it's all tied in together. You know, it's just like we were speaking about the Black Panthers Party, also the Cobra Party, when it was actually, you know, writing letters back and forth instead of the brothers and them sitting down and be like, hold on, let's who trying to coerce against us to fight against one another. But no, they didn't even much do that. So now we must be very vigilant and eye-opening to see who are the black devils amongst us. There was a letter that came out on a newspaper that was called Newsletter Frontline. They were saying how Jesse Jackson also had things against the Pistons. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
I mean, it's a whole lot of stuff that his hands had been into.
Yeah.
You know, so it did. You know, he came out there on the land, too, down there in Georgia. And look what happened when
Dr. Lucas
was going to jail.
He did Al Sharpton, too.
Yeah, both of them. You know what I'm saying? So they both, you see, but they have to use them as a pawn to actually keep the masses of the so-called misnomer Negroes asleep to what is actually going on.
Because look
what wound up happening, right, when you said about Barack Obama. He said, I like to cut his balls off.
At the speech,
when Barack Obama was at the stadium, he was crying. And I'm like, hold on, what the fuck he crying for? He just want to cut the dude's balls off.
You know,
unless that was a Masonic talk.
Right.
You see? Yeah. So, I mean, it's crazy. And then you really got to look at it. You come out with the Rainbow Coalition, and then you have everybody talking about that gay is the new black dealing with civil rights. But you got a Rainbow Coalition, but we know that when they was talking about, this is so fucked up, bro. It ain't even much funny.
That's right. You're right. I agree. Hold on, Brother Paul. Let me get this other caller in here. Let's see what you want to have to say here. Peace. Greetings,
Peace. Is this my line?
Oh, this you.
Guys. Peace, how y'all doing?
Hey.
peace, got it.
Peace, guys. The God just asked, peace, Brother Noble Pop, peace, God.
Peace.
The God
peace.
Just asked, what the fuck he crying for? We already know. One of the brothers shared with us that the Caucasian at his job said, I don't know why you happy y'all won. We ain't going to do nothing but take it out on y'all. And then also, too, they're taking away the gun laws. Y'all know how Caucasians are about their guns. So it's like right now, I just want to give a shout out to the past ancestors, Martin Luther King, Malcolm, Earl Ryan. I'm going to say his name three times like Beetlejuice. Malcolm Earl Ryan. That's my oldest brother. I break him down on my website. I'm going to put his picture up there, too. Also, the website is in the work. It's a work in progress. We're not finished with it. There's a lot more that needs to be done. We just want to make sure it was out. I also want to give a shout out to Malcolm Shalom El Bay. He crossed over too for the energy of 2012, y'all. That energy is still resonating. And I also want to just take a moment out because it's a storm brewing. It's a storm brewing. I know in Georgia is one brewing here. I want us to just take deep breaths together and garb ourselves in gold light. When you take that deep breath, hold it for 3 seconds. And then exhale for 6. There's some people out there that are suffering right now. The storm is whooping ass. I can hear it. So with this garbing of the gold light, right, it's going to keep us protected.
Yep.
It's going to make it so that what we think manifests. So let's keep breathing in deeply together. Holding it for 3. And exhaling for 6. Holding it for 3. And exhaling for 6. And see that gold light, right? It keeps you protected.
Yes, Goddess.
It also draws more positive energy. That's what it does. So anyway, I got an announcement too. We have a females add-on website Friday. It's from 3 to 5. You can hit up Covered for Covered Beauty on Facebook. We're going to be teaching the women how to manifest more economics, helping y'all build your own website, showing y'all how to group purchase gold and silver, showing you how to group purchase everything. When we come together with our economics, we can do more. Also, we have a conference on Sunday where everybody is invited. That's going to be at 9 o'clock, so 9 to 11. But I just want to just add on to the conversation, and I'm going to pass it over to the gods. Y'all, anybody want to say anything?
Yeah, please.
Please, Goddess. Please, Goddess.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
And she actually, Brother Ali, she actually, the goddess actually hit it on the head when it was talking about taking the guns away, because if you remember in the ISIS paper, the doctor, she actually was saying how the gun is actually the European's penis. So
right.
Now you're messing with their manhood.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're upset about. See, we, the Aboriginal, Indigenous, Native people, we don't have to worry about no gun, because when they're going to come out, they don't have no laws against no bows and no crossbows. You see what I'm saying? We can go back to that. You know what I'm saying? The chattel knives and stuff. So we all right.
That's right. That's right. You're right, Brother Paul. No doubt about it.
I'd like to make a comment on the about the President Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
As regards to the brother, what he said, what the fuck he's crying about. What the fuck he's crying about is because he knows what's getting ready to come down.
Right.
And he knows the gun control laws, what they're planning on doing is confiscating everybody's weapons and destroying the Second Amendment. And once they do that, the other amendments are going to be destroyed, right, and including your Constitution, if we allow it, which I don't believe we are going to allow.
Right, right. Well, I know there's a lot of threatening going on from Alex Jones, you know, and others saying that if they try to take the guns, it's going to be civil war in this country.
And that's what Barack Obama is crying about.
Yeah.
Right.
So we definitely know that for a fact, because that's already been stated by Alex Jones and many others from the NRA and different other groups.
No doubt.
Well,
okay,
well,
so that's why those boys were sacrificed with the Skittles and the tea. And you see what I'm saying?
Yes,
ma'am. Put that mess out.
But you know what? But even at that, even if there was not to be any gun laws, right, remember, who are the manufacturers for the bullets? Most of our people don't even much have no sweat here anyway to make their own bullets, you see? And I've been telling people for the longest, when you see bird shit, scoop it up. You know? I was telling them this. I say, when you see bird shit, scoop it up. Save it. Take it and put it in some canisters. But you think they won't listen? No. Bird manure.
What you doing? Wait a minute. What you doing to bird shit?
Get ready to tell you.
Yeah. You know, it becomes gunpowder. You see?
Oh.
But they was listening? No. So, hey. I think military minded me.
Well, we all need to start thinking militarily minded, you know.
Exactly.
I know I need.
Well,
to
you just it. Dropped the jewel. now we all know that.
Exactly.
Yeah, because I mean it's real simple. Our ancestors, our Moorish family over there in China, it was the ones that actually came up with the gunpowder from using bird feces and dealing with sulfur and everything to make gunpowder. You
That's
see,
true.
To make firecrackers. So you don't need a bullet to do things, because actually, that's why I was like, I don't know why our family members and them went head on and trade with them to get guns with bullets and gunpowder, when you had to take and put the gunpowder in the gun first, then you got to push the gunpowder down, then put the bullet in there, and pack the bullet in there. And I'm like, that's too much time. Well, you had an arrow. All that you had to do was take it out the holster, take it, shoot it, and then you can reuse an arrow. You know
right.
what I'm saying? Unless you break it off in a person. So I was like, what made them want to trade for a gun anyway? Because you can see it from long distance? Nah. You know, so it was way more than that. So I'm like, they should keep their guns. I don't even much need it.
Well, they've been showing that a lot here more lately, you know, on movies, you know, of people going back to arrows. You know, they got, the arrow being shown in so many movies. I can't even think of all of them right now, you know, at this time because
mm-hmm.
this subject. But, I mean, it's a real, you know, it's definitely something in which that people definitely need to investigate is learning archery. You know what I'm saying? I know I learned it back in the days, and I probably need to pick it back up. You know, but, you know, we all need to start doing something based on martial arts, the Manitou arts, you know what I'm saying, to get back in tune.
Yeah.
But thanks, Brother Pa. We're going to go back to the phone lines here. And we got, we get ready to bring on for the second half. Deborah?
Yes, good night, Dr. Bay.
Night. Hold on. Let me see if the other caller is back yet. Okay. Greetings. 773, area code 773.
Yeah, it's back again.
Okay. Peace.
Okay.
Peace.
All right, thank you, Dr. Bay, for welcoming this interview. Tonight, we're graced with a seasoned author. His name is Dr. Gant, Dr. Anthony Gant, and his latest book is called Never Get Fired Again. Welcome, Dr. Gant, to the Dr. Bay Show.
Thank you for having me, Deb. I do appreciate it as well, Dr. Bay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Of course. I know that you can shed some light on helping people get through these difficult economic times, so we definitely thank you for having your presence here tonight. Dr. Gant, here's the scenario. Your ungrateful employer has just told you to take a lifetime vacation. That does not sit well with you. What should you do to sustain stability or to gain leverage in life?
Well, when your employer tells you something like that, what you have to realize is that sometimes the outdoor may be the indoor. Sometimes when people put you out of their company, they really actually give you the chance to get in your own company and start your own business. Unfortunately, a lot of us, Deborah, haven't been taught how to do that. And we understand that having our own business is putting us in control of our working present as well as our working future. So the question that needs to be asked is, how much control do I want to have over my working present, and how much control do I want to have over my working future? Now, the more control you give up in your present, the less control you're going to have in your future.
Exactly.
That's why we have a hard time understanding that we should be in business for ourselves. It's about control.
Wow, thank you. That was thought-provoking. Now, Dr. Gant, can you please inform our listeners of some of your former life experiences that may have encouraged you to write such a multifaceted book, Never Get Fired Again? What influenced you to write that book, Never Get Fired Again?
Well, I'm a business consultant and been an entrepreneur for quite a while, for pretty much 15 years. And what I realized is that I don't think I realized it as much because I've been an entrepreneur for so long. And when the recession came, more people were forced to be out here in the entrepreneur world that I had been a part of for numerous years before that happened. And to me, it seemed like a normal way to do things as far as being an entrepreneur. But I've seen that a lot of people, it wasn't something that was old. It was a new thing to them. It was something that was revolutionary to them because they were forced out of the situation that they were in. So being that they were forced out of the situation that they were in, they had to actually still make money or earn money from some type of employment, but they couldn't get back into the job market. So I found out after the last 3 or 4 years, all the consulting that I've done, helping people start from where they are to get to where they want to be, and again, taking control of their working present as well as their working future, it helped me come up with the book Never Get Fired Again, because people... One thing you say about people that go and get a job, they say, I'm looking for job security. I want to make sure my stuff is secure. But if you don't have control over it, it's not secure. It's almost being in the passenger seat of someone else's car. You don't have control over the driving when you're not driving. You only have control over the driving or the car when you're driving the car. And so your security is in you driving, not in you riding. And that's the problem. That's what I end up coming up with and realizing that more people are so interested in riding in the front seat or riding in a good car, riding in a good company, so to speak, or being next to the boss, or being the assistant to the boss, not realizing it's best that you are the boss. So now you have security because you have control.
Once again, I definitely appreciate your answers and your insight to what's really going on. Thank you. Now, what are some of the benefits of becoming your own boss?
Well, one of the benefits, obviously, again, like I've stated a couple of times, is having control. And when you have control, then that means in order to be in the driver's seat of your life, so to speak, you have to be willing to make decisions. So you have to be a decision maker because every business, everything that happens in a business is made by a decision maker. Now, if you're working for someone else and they say that you have to go, this is your last day, that decision was made by a business person. It was made by someone else that's a business person. So that means the problem that we have, there are a lot of people are afraid to make decisions about their own future. They're afraid to make decisions about their own present. In other words, they're afraid to take control of what they can do and the skills that they have. And since they lack that decision-making ability, then they put themselves in a position where somebody else is going to make the decision for you. Now, the person that makes the decision for you won't put you first. The person that's making the decision for you is putting themselves first. So they're not thinking about your family first. They're not thinking about your parents. They're not thinking about your kids' education. They're not thinking about your house note. They're not thinking about your car note. They're not thinking about your grocery bill. They're not thinking about your light bill. Because when they make that decision, they're making that decision for them first. So my thing is, why don't you get in the driver's seat and think about making the decision for yourself first, for your family, for your house note, for your mortgage, your car payment, and everything else that goes along with it. Why? Because if I make the decision for me first and my family can depend on me, they can trust me, they can rely on me. Don't rely on other people more than you rely on yourself. If that's the case, you have just given up control, and the more control you give up in your present, the less control you're going to have in your future.
Definitely. Now, being as though it takes money to acquire money, how can one acquire the startup money to build their own business?
Okay, and that's usually a big issue for a lot of people because they say, I want to get into business for myself. I always tell people, you look at the word to the word business, is B-U-S-I, miss, right? But really, that's busy. And see, the problem is with a lot of people, they don't realize that being in business, you're going to be busy. And if you want to be in business, you can't be lazy. Lazy people need not apply to get in business. Not, so I don't care how much money you have. If you're lazy, you won't be in business long anyway. So if you the issue of having money, what people need to understand in business, because I started businesses from the ground up, just like a lot of other people have done, and one thing that you need more than money is customers. And if you don't know how to go find customers each and every day, and you don't know how to take care of the customers that you found the days before today, you're going to be out of business, and I don't care how much money I give you. You'll run through that money just as quick. Some people run through $1 million in 30 days. Some people take a year. Some people take 5 years. And the reason being, they don't know how to go find customers. It's all about customers. And why is that so important, Deborah? Because customers have what? Money. They have money. And that's what I need. I need money. If I have money and no customers, I'm going to still be out of business. If I have customers and money, I can stay in business. So the first objective is to find customers for your business. If you can't find customers, then you should not be in business until you learn how to find customers each and every day.
Now, what if one lacks strong people skills? For example, they have a fear of conflict. Would it be wise for that person to create their own business?
Well, see, again, it goes back to saying you've got to be a decision maker. And, yeah, you're going to have conflict, but you have conflict on jobs. People still go work them, though.
Yeah.
So they don't run away from a job because they're going to have a conflict. There's going to be somebody at that company that they don't like or don't like them and don't like women, don't like men, don't like old people, young people, and all the other things that go along with it. But that don't stop them from filling out an application for a job. So why should it stop them from running the business? Yeah, you're going to have some. You need to develop your people skills. That's one of the five things that I tell people you need to have with any business. You have to develop people skills with your customers, and people skills with business people. If you can't develop people skills, then your customers going to feel like, you know, you're not taking care of them or that you don't want them to be around. If you don't develop business skills with suppliers, then you're going to hurt yourself there because you're going to have people that don't want to deal with you and supply you what you need to sell to customers. So that's something, in business, you have to always be refining yourself, and you have to become always more educated. In other words, Deborah, you have to get to the point where you are so sold on learning that you're going to pay for learning. Why? See, because when you make learning your master, then that means you're refusing to make ignorance being a slave to ignorance. And that's what people don't realize. They're slaves to their ignorance because they refuse to make learning their master. And once you make learning your master, you don't mind paying for learning because the more you know, the less ignorant you become.
So you have to always be open to investing in yourself.
Always. And that's why we call it knowledge. If you look at the last three, four letters of the word knowledge, it's edge. You only as sharp as what you know. If you don't know very much, you're not that sharp. And if you want to get sharper than you are, that means you need to hang around people that's sharper than you are. Because it won't be long before you become sharper than you are. Because you'll be around people that have an edge on them. Not an edge of being rude, arrogant, discontent, or anything in that nature, but an edge of knowing what they're doing, knowing what they're talking about. It'll make you sharper as you stay around those people. But here's the problem, Deborah. A lot of people don't want to hang around people that's sharp. They want to hang around a lot of people that's dull. They want to hang around people that don't know much because then there's no challenge. There's no expectation of you have to be smarter than you were the last time I talked to you. You might be doing better this year than you were last year, last time I seen you. But if I hang around a bunch of dull people that aren't that interested in making learning their master, well, we can be just as dumb as I was last year because you're not going to challenge me to be smarter. So that means that you have to get around people that's smarter than you so that you can become smarter than you.
As they say, iron sharpens iron.
Iron sharpens iron, that's right.
Now, how can we knowledge seekers purchase your books, your various books? I know you authored up to 14 books.
Yes,
you know, I know you have. How can we go about purchasing those books?
Well, obviously, they can contact me at different places. I was just this past summer, I was voted through the Black Business Network. I was voted the 2012 Black Speaker of the Year. And
congratulations.
Thank you very much. And the Black Business Network, that's one of the only places I allow to carry my books besides myself. But then they can all email me at Dr. Tony Gant, G-A-N-T-T, at gmail.com. If they want any of my products or obviously if they want to talk to me, I try to make myself very accessible for those who want to learn something that I know. I don't know everything. I just know everything that I wrote in my books, but I don't know everything. So I just try to share what I know.
Can you give us some insight? Can you give us a list of some of the books in which you've written?
Yeah. Okay, well, obviously the latest one is Never Get Fired Again, How to Have 100% Job Security. I've written a book entitled I Love Me. It's How to Build Strategies to Build Healthy Self-Esteem. Another book that I've written is entitled You Too Can Write a Book. I show you how to take everything, you know, take it out of your head and out of your heart and put it on paper. I've written a book entitled Paid to Talk, How to Be a Paid Professional Speaker. Moving My Life, How to Stop Procrastinating and Start Progressing. And that book is very powerful because a lot of times, Deborah, a lot of us will talk a better game than we play. And what I mean by that, we'll talk about all the things we want to do, all the things we want to have, all the places we want to go, all the things we want to be. But we do so much talking that we think our conversation is going to bring a realization. But it won't. It's called action. You have to activity. See, until you change your activity, then you can start accomplishing things. So first you change your mentality, then you change your activity, then you can change your reality. But if your reality won't change, if your activity stays the same, meaning that your mentality is still the same. So what happens is a lot of people procrastinate by putting off what they can do today. They're trying to put it off to tomorrow, but then when tomorrow will come, they do the same thing when tomorrow turns into today. They're trying to put it off tomorrow, putting what they still do today off to tomorrow. But then when that tomorrow will come and turn into a today, they do the same thing. And then they look back after a week, after a month, after a year, after a decade, and you say, what have you done the last 10 years? And they look so despondent, they have so much regret because they haven't done very much because they procrastinated a whole lot. So that's a great book to help people, whatever they're doing, to learning more about your history, learning more about your business, or learn how to raise your kids better, whatever it may be. You have to stop procrastinating. So I like to say it like this: history H-I-S-T-O-R-Y. I heard a lot of that on the call tonight, a lot of history, which was really, really good. But I always tell people, put a hyphen between the I and the S, Deborah. And then it's called High Story. See, if you don't know your high story, you're going to live a low life. And that's what people don't understand about knowing their history or high story. So many people live such a low life, and it's all because they don't know their high story, their history. So I appreciate what you all doing on the call because you're sharing a high story to prevent people from living such a low life. Those are some of the books that I've written.
Now, Dr. Gant, you're also a paid speaker.
Yes.
What are some of the questions that one should ask themselves prior to deciding to become a paid speaker? I know you have a book on becoming a paid speaker.
Yes, I do. One thing, Deborah, that if people want to become a paid speaker, I always tell people when I train them and even when I coach people on becoming paid professional speakers, I said that the first thing, you have to have a heart for people. You have to care about people. If you don't care about people, don't come in this profession because you'll mess people up. You'll get blinded by money because there's a lot of it to be earned in this profession. But it has to be about helping people become better people than they are. It's about helping people do better than what they do. If it's not about people, then you're actually hurting those people and you're hurting yourself. So I like to tell people, in order to get into the professional speaker realm, you need to know how to, you know, turn your message or your mess into a message. See, the root word to the word message is mess. What mess have you been in and been out of? What mess did you go in with your personal relationships? What mess have you been in with your finances or whatever it may be? Well, if you learn something from it, now you can turn that mess into a message. That means that when you turn your mess into a message, it can massage the lives of the people that hear you. And if anybody ever got a massage before, Deborah, just one time, nobody gets upset with a massage. They don't get mad at the person that gave them a massage and said, you messed up my life. You made me feel better than I felt before I met you. Oh, my goodness, that pain that I had is gone. It is your fault. No one gets upset with a massage. So if you have a message, and it came from a mess that you learned how to get out of, now you can massage the lives of the people that hear you. And now they don't mind paying you for what you know because they don't know it yet, and they want to learn it. So people will hand over money to you to know what you know if you're willing to teach them what you know because they're willing to learn it. So one of the things, to go back, Deborah, you have to actually have a heart for people first. It can't just be about money because it's just about money. You know, go out there and work a job. Go out there and do something else just for money. But it has to be about helping people become better and do better.
And that translates into a powerful outcome, definitely.
Thank you.
Now, do you have a formula in which you apply in regards to your business of becoming or being a paid speaker?
Yeah, one thing that I use a 4-step formula. For the first 10 years, Deb, I've been in the speaking business close to, well, probably over 20 years now, but for the first 10 years of my speaking career, somewhere around there, I made no money. I didn't get paid. Good thing I was doing something else at the time, but I earned no money from being a paid professional speaker. As a matter of fact, Deborah, if someone would have given me a check, you know what I would have done? I would have cashed it.
Right.
Yeah, I would have done that. You know, and I don't think I was speaking all those, right on the spot, that's right. And I don't think I was speaking all those years not to get paid. However, that's the first way I got paid. Somebody did give me a check, and I cashed it. But it was 10 years, and most people can't last 10 years. Like I said, fortunately enough for me, I had some other things going on. Otherwise, I would have starved to death. You know, I'm a single dad raising two kids. Man, we've been in trouble, right? So what I did learn is how to get paid, but I end up finding something out that there's a lot of money in the industry, right? And if you're not careful, you know, your motives can become unjust, they can become impure because of the fact that you're blinded by the money because you can earn thousands of dollars in a matter of a couple of hours because of the fact of the industry that you're in. So I had to come up with a formula to make sure my motives stayed pure and I stayed on track. And I did what I was going up there to do when I actually help people with what they do. So the first, I have a 4-step formula, and it's PAID. It's an acronym for PAID, P-A-I-D. And the P in that PAID is for problem. You got to find a problem. But you don't find a problem just to go around telling everybody about the problem. Nobody's going to pay you just because you found a problem. Some people don't know problems even exist, so they don't even care if there is a problem. However, after you find a problem, you need to find answers. That's what the A is. And you need to find as many answers as you can come up with to the problems that do exist. People don't mind giving you a little money if you can find an answer to a problem. but the I is for instruct. You must instruct people on how to apply the answers you have to the problems that they have. If you can't instruct me on how to apply the answers that you gave me to the problems that I have, I'm in the same situation having the problem without the answer because I don't know how to apply your answers that you gave. And the D is to dedicate yourself to this process more than you're dedicated to money and you can get paid. So I call that the paid formula, which is trademarked by me, but it's called the paid formula. And that's what I use for the last decade or so to keep me focused on why I'm there and what I'm supposed to do in the process.
Paid, as in P for problem, A for answer, I for instruct, and D to dedicate?
That's right.
Okay. Now, Dr. Gant, you are a seasoned speaker. Do you have any audio programs? And if so, how can we go about purchasing them?
I do have audio programs on how to be a paid speaker. I have audio programs on Never Get Fired Again, which is about 8 hours. I have an audio program on all the products that I actually have. I have audio programs on them. And obviously, people can contact me directly because you can only get the best deal from the source, which is me. But they can contact me directly and they can get that information personally from me by just contacting Dr. Tony Gant at gmail.com and then let me know what program they want. If they want to know more information about them, they can. And obviously, I do several different conference calls, for people all over the United States to learn how to do some of the things that I've been fortunate enough to be able to do.
Well, thank you, Dr. Gant, and thank you, Dr. Bay, again for welcoming this interview, and thank you, Dr. Gant, for expressing your wealth of knowledge tonight. We definitely appreciate it. Once again, we spoke to Dr. Gant, Dr. Tony Grant, on Never Get Fired Again, his latest book.
Dr. Gant, we have some people, too, that have been in the chat room asking about how to get your book, so that's great that they'll be able to listen. We have about 4,000 downloads, and the concept of economics is powerful. It's a powerful vibration. It kicked off in Florida, and we're going to keep that vibration going. So this is just on point. We have some very intelligent listeners, plus members of the Wealth Builders team that listen, and also shouts out to the students in the Healing Wings Institute class. Now, you wouldn't be opposed to those who purchase your book or your audios to donate to the temple, would you?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't be opposed to anybody purchasing them and donating them in, anywhere they want to. I mean, all they have to do is call me. I'm pretty accessible. They just need to call me out if I'm in some type of meeting or training or something. I can't get you right away, but I'm really accessible. I have assistants that work with me on several emails, so I can make sure I can answer as many as I can as quickly as I can.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it seems like you have a question, but you can donate for for a percentage of the sales that you accumulate from the show at dralimelbay.com, and we really appreciate those vibrations. This forum, like I said, has over 4,000 downloads in a week, so just powerful. The vibration is really powerful. Now, you do have a question in the chat room. Area code.
Okay.
302. Oh, this is family. Area code 302.
Peace and love.
Peace and love, God.
Yeah, this Messiah, as he's ill.
His brother.
Calling in, just bigging up the brother for his demonstration on economics and how we all need to be our own bosses, which is what we're going to be promoting, the same type of thing at this temple here, temple number 2, F in Laurel, Delaware. We're trying to secure economics for all members that come in, and that way we can be our own bosses and then in turn be able to focus on learning or knowing spirituality and things of that nature. So, I just want to give you a shout out in regard to that on your demonstration. And also anybody who's in the area who is interested, I also want to get in, I need some of your literature and your audio and stuff like that. I need to get in touch with you and purchase some of that because I want to bring that to the table here.
Okay.
And anyone who is in the area of Delaware, we down in southern Delaware, we temple number 2F, which is located at 513 Pine Street, Laurel, Delaware. We have an email address, which is Moorish Holy Temple of Science 2F at gmail.com. We also will be in April doing a grand opening when Aleem and Kadir will come down and demonstrate, and a few other guest speakers are going to come down and demonstrate as well. And our phone number is area code 302-236-3781. That's 302-236-3781. My name is Messiah, or Sheik is Crystal.
Powerful. I know we're definitely going to be there.
Absolutely.
And that was Morse Holy Temple 2F as in Father?
Yes, 2F. Morse Holy Temple of Science, 2F at Gmail.
.com,
correct. Looking forward to hearing from a lot of people and continuing on to further our economic structure in our society, period.
Appreciate you, Brother Messiah, for coming on.
I definitely appreciate you.
Also appreciate you, Brother Gant, for giving out that information, excellent information on economics and how we need to actually move to that realm, because we actually were, my wife, Messiah, his wife, all of us were at a conference called the Summit of the Moors, and we was building on economics, in particular economics dealing from land to aquaponics, hydroponics, organic gardens, and et cetera. You know, we was building on it from every aspect in which that you also was referring to and talking about. So economics is definitely the move for today, and we definitely need to be moving towards that. So we definitely want your information once again before you go. Can you please get that to us?
Yeah, not a problem. I definitely can. I do appreciate the opportunity, and I like the fact that you all talking about economics. And I just say this brief moment that, see, I share a lot of things with people to help them. You know, a lot of people say they want to be millionaires and things of that nature, and that's wonderful. And once you know the system, it's not like it's that difficult to accomplish that, to be worth seven figures. However, I tell people, before we get people become millionaires, let's help a whole lot of people become thousandaires.
Right.
So what do I mean?
Right.
What I mean by that? Because, you know, I do seminars on finances all the time and different audiences. And I always start with the question, how many of you all in 2012 or whatever year it may be, how many of you all have saved at least $1,000 in the last 12 months? Now, that's no indictment if you didn't, but how many have? And it's really about 20% of the audience at best. So that means that 8 out of 10 people, unfortunately, wasn't able to save $1,000 last year. Now, that doesn't mean that something is wrong with them. That's not the issue. It may be something wrong with the plan that they have. That's the issue. That's what's broken, not them. We just need to fix the plan that they have. So what I tell people, let's make them thousandaires, because once I see how they earn, you know, become a thousandaire, then you become a multiple thousandaire, and eventually you become a 10,000-aire, and you become multiple 10,000-aires, and eventually you become a 100,000-aire, and then you become multiple 100,000-aires, and then eventually you become millionaires, and then you do that a couple of times, you can become multi-millionaire. So the thing of knowing about how money works, how to work the money, I don't care how old you are, from the time you start dealing with money, and I don't care how old you get, you're going to have to deal with money. So doesn't it make sense? Now just think about this for a moment. Doesn't it make sense that should be a priority, that we know how money works? I didn't say fall in love with money. Just know how it works, because I don't care how old I get, I am going to need to have money. I'm going to need to buy groceries. I'm going to need to put gas in my car. I'm going to need to, buy soap. I'm going to need to buy something, food. So doesn't it make sense that we know something about money? So I appreciate the fact that you all are talking about economics. I'm glad that I was able to share some things about being your own boss and things of that nature. But and hopefully I get another opportunity in the future to share some more information with you that I know. Don't know everything. I just know what I know, and I just try to share that with as many people as I possibly can.
Definitely, you will be back again. That's no doubt about that, and we would love to have you back for a full show speaking on economics and actually having our own summit conference on economics online here where everyone can get a chance in order to learn more about real economics and the science of making money, having money, and doing what we need to do properly with it. We need food, clothing, and shelter. But we need to be manufacturing our clothes, in which
Right.
We don't, you know, and problems with us people is getting to that aspect, building to that aspect. Every time in which that we have someone to come forth, they ends up selling a company, whether it's FUBU, Carl Kanai, or et cetera. After they come out for about 5 years or so, they get bought out, the company then eventually knows anything else about it.
Right. That's true. That's true. And that's something that, like you said, Doctor, we have to get more enforced into the manufacturing side. See, the person that produces something has more control than anybody else.
Exactly.
If you produce the clothing, you set the price. You set the price. That means that you have control. If you just buy the clothing, and it's unfortunate that FUBU and places like that sold out. I don't like it, but, you know, it is what it is. But we need to teach more of us how to produce them. Eventually, we will produce the cars. We'll produce a whole lot of things if you give us enough time and give us enough money. It's enough black people that in the United States of America, just for that fact, that know how to produce something. They may not have the money, so to speak, but they know how to produce a computer just as well as Apple. They know how to produce telephones just as good as Motorola. So that means that we have to get good at supporting these people with these great ideas and supporting people that has the heart to strike out their own and say, I'm going to be in business for myself. I don't care if it's making food or making clothing or making shoes or building houses. I'm going to strike out on my own. And then we must support that group of people that strike out on their own, because if we support them, then those that don't want to be in business for themselves can have a job waiting on them.
Yeah, because here we are looking at the inventor of the cell phone, Henry Sampson. Do he get any credit for us making the cell phone? And this is a brother, once again, who designed and put together the cell phone, and here it is being a multi-billion-dollar industry. Do we think that his family get any of that, you know, any royalties for that or anything? I mean, it's just like, you know, George Washington Carver. You know, died, you know, a pauper, died, you know what I'm saying, with no money.
That's right.
You know, we look at Philip M. U. Wally, you know, who is actually the father of the Internet. You know, do he get any recognition for being the one to come up with the idea of HTTP, in which that, in a sense, that stands for HOTEP, you know, or one in which they put together the design for the Internet service? You know, again, this is a brother, you know, so... we have to begin to start padding our ideas and our you know, that's the first step, is padding them so that when someone comes along, we can still reap the benefits, even if we choose to, you know, I guess, sell our design or whatever the case may be. There should be a clause in there that we should still have some type of share or something. I mean, because this is ridiculous, because this thing about us not having no distribution companies, not having any type of major manufacturing or corporations, you know, in the sense of doing import and export internationally, this is something in which that definitely has to stop. We have to come into, you, brother Claude Anderson and others, is hitting on the right points. And this is something that if we follow black power of economics, you know, up under Amos Wilson, you know, and start to really look into what he was saying too. Mm-hmm. I think that we can definitely be where we need to be at.
Okay.
Dr. Grant, the thousandaires, are y'all dealing with compounding interest or foreign exchange currencies?
Well, I don't deal with the foreign exchange currency. Not that it's not good. I'm one of these that, and the more you listen to me and the more you know, we talk, I'm one of these elementary type people. And I'm big on, if you want to look smart, learn to take something complicated and make it simple. And perhaps if you want to look like a genius, make sure simple things don't get complicated. So I teach very simple, basic truths, because before people can step into these higher realms of things, they need to get the basics done. Before a person can dance real good, they better be able to walk pretty good first. You understand what I'm saying? Before they start break dancing and doing flips and twists and everything, they better get pretty good at knowing how to walk, knowing how to stand. And that's really where I, most of my focus is on, because I realized years ago, my sister, that sometimes I would talk to people like I'm talking to giraffes. You understand what I'm saying? I'll be talking up way up here, and I'm listening to them because they're way down there. That's not saying they're bad. I just wasn't meeting them where they are because, you know, I can talk on some things on wealth and how to become worth seven figures, but most people don't want to become worth seven figures. They say they do, but they really don't. But they really just want to have enough money to get financially ahead. They just want to make sure that, hey, they got enough money to pay all their bills and maybe save a little money and maybe do a few extra things. And if that's what they desire, that's okay. That's not a bad thing. However, I can show you some millionaires that I train right now today that had millions of dollars and lost it. And why did they lose it? Not because they had the $1 million. They lost it because they didn't know the basics. They didn't know how to actually work the basics of everything. And so they was out there doing things, and the $1 million looked good when they had it, but as quickly as they got it, they lost it because they didn't know the basics of money. They didn't know the basics of how the money works. They didn't know the basics of how to invest. And, you know, I tell people, my sister, that everybody should have what I call SSI. It's not an SSI check. It's what you do as SSI with money. And what I mean is S, spend some. The second S, save some. And the third S, invest some. Make sure you do that with your money. That's your SSI. Spend some, save some, invest some. And then you might start small in your investment and your savings. And then, you know, your spending may be out of whack right now. But then we want to eventually get down. Our spending is low, our saving is high, and our investment is even higher.
Ashe, I love that. And on our Wealth Builders team, because we trust and honor each other and we've been dealing with each other a long time, we know each other, we come together, too, with our economics and invest. So we definitely spend some, share some, spend some, save some, and invest.
I like that.
So I want to invite you, too, if you can, on Sunday at 9 o'clock, to our Wealth Builders Conference. It'll also be via Blog Talk, but you'll also get a chance to, you know, meet some other wealth builders because we can handle the seven figures because we need to do the aquaponics. Shout-outs to Brother Sunyata, 12. We also need to do the schools. We also need to do, you know, grocery stores. And we're ready, you know, but you're right. Everybody's not. And that's what we want to do. We want to bring them up, you know, because it's currency. Energy and emotion, and I want to see them with. And right. Once we have more, Blackamoors have more, then the world will be a better place, especially said if they have the basics. Because we're the oldest indigenous people on the planet. Got big hearts, just got to learn this economics thing. I'm so grateful that this energy is resonating. The Mayans brought the energy, the Olmecans brought the energy in 2012, you know, so it's resonating. And we can feel like it's the change, you know. Let's see if you have any other questions or comments. So all you got to do is press one comment, a question, you know, on any topic. Love to hear from y'all. Brother Rosarin L., you ain't said nothing.
silver and gold.
You know what, too? The Chinese have dropped some gold. Okay? They put it in the market.
Mm-hmm.
What's your perspective on that, Brother Dr. Gant?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your last question. Go ahead.
Your perspective on the Chinese, on China backing their money with gold. Have you heard that again?
Yeah. Well, everybody kind of, well, obviously back in research money, you know, everybody, that's what money used to be backed back to. The money was only good as the gold you had. You know, now it's a little bit inflated because of certain things. But here's what I share with people all the time, that, you know, sometimes you don't know where to go and what to do with the money, and that's okay. That's not a problem. But I say follow the little old man. And if the little old man is doing it, for instance, if big people are putting big money in places, you may not have $10 million to put into that same thing, but do you have $100 to put into that same thing? Because the little old man is not going to put $10 million, $20 million something and not expect to get some type of good return from it. So follow the little old man, because the little old man is actually putting where he can get a lot of dollars. And you may, again, you may put your $100 in there, you may not get $10 million back, but you may get double, which is $200. You may get triple. But you have to follow a little old man, meaning you have to be astute to what's going on, because the word currency, I heard you say it earlier, is movement. That's what it means, movement. And money does not attach itself to people that don't move.
Mm-hmm.
It attaches itself to move. It's a moving thing. So currency is moving. The question I ask people, are you moving? Not just like physically moving. Are you mentally moving? Are you physically moving? Because money attaches itself to a moving thesis. And people that don't want to move and want to sit around and maybe they want to be lazy to a certain degree, the money can't attach to you because you're not moving. So you got to be moving, following the little old man, like you said, or doing some things that you're saying yourself, you know, like follow, you know, the gold or and just wealth builders and connecting with you all. I mean, you know, the first time I've been on the phone with you all, and it's, you know, it's a lot of energy here, and I'm thankful that you all are on doing what you're doing and trying to help as many people as possible. But more and more people need to connect with you all and then find out, hey, if I don't know, they know. Hey, if you're in a car and we're driving from New York to Florida and you're in the car with me and I'm driving, we both get to Florida at the same time.
So do.
You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, you jump in the car with some people that's moving and then they get a little tired. They say, can you drive an hour? You drive an hour. But because you're in the car with them, you're going to get to Florida the exact same time they get to Florida. That's the wonderful part about it, getting around people that's smarter than and they're willing to share information with you about finance or spiritual things or whatever it may be. They're willing to share that with you. Get with those people. Rub up against those people because who you hug up on, you're going to smell like. Yeah, if you like what these people what you all are doing, people need to hug up with you so they can smell like you. And then you got two people smelling good, not just one.
Okay. I remember the handsome old man that I met at, when I worked, help us add on. Because we've had a store for 13 years now. We were sleeping on the floor in our store. We was humble with it. And I was working as a waitress, and I was making good money. And I had a little hustle in me because I would sell the cigarettes for $1. And I would sell lighters and whatever. But I met a lot of great people. So a lot of people have 9-to-5, and I always tell y'all can use your 9-to-5 steady income in order to invest with.
That's right.
Invest some, save some. Well, he taught me to share some. Every time he got something to drink, he would give me the same amount of the tip. It was 100% tip. So I was just so excited about the fractions and stuff. So I also want to encourage the family to teach their children. My mother had me selling candy in high school, and I had people selling candy with me. And I also sold rainbow vacuum cleaners. So I've always had the hustle in me. You know, so encourage that in your babies, the economic values. I even seen this lady show her son how to pay the bills and, you know, online. Just it's so easy. Just incorporate them. And so if you're moving, like the brother was saying, if you're moving, then it makes it easier to invest. It's even easier. You know,
right.
Just change some things. Like, don't get the name brands, or you know, go to some thrift stores, and you could loosen up the money for clothing. You see what I'm saying? And put it somewhere else, just for a moment. Because once you invest, it'll start making things change for you. You know, Farrakhan came to Fayetteville and got some $700 stocks, and people was hating. But he sacrificed. I'm sure everybody got to sacrifice.
Right.
You know, to get what they want. So definitely move.
Yes, definitely move. If I may say something here, one thing we have to do, especially number one thing we have to do, is have the real understanding what money is and what money isn't.
That's right.
You know, if we think, well, most people think anyway, I know Eileen know and Sister Kadira know. I know. I don't know if you know or not. If we think that what most people think what money is, then all of our understanding about what about money is wrong.
Right.
Because if we stay on that kind of thinking and understanding what money is, which it isn't, then we'll never have any control or real control of our own economy and wealth.
Right.
You follow me so far?
Yeah.
Yes. Right. That's why I was stressing on the silver and gold. real money can only be real only if it's backed by silver and gold. That's it. So far, it's been backed by our own energy and labor. But that's going to come. It can only go so far. You know, you cannot never pay a debt with another debt. It always fails. Always. That's my input.
And you have absolutely right, God, you know. And that's why we are group purchasing gold and silver. If you want to know, just go to the website, put in the box that you was inspired by the Grand Sheik to get in the group. come with your $50 or your $100, and, you know, let's make it happen. That's another thing, too, that I love about the Boricanians, the Taínos, misnomer the Mexicans, because they will get in that car to Florida, and they will be 6 and 7 D. So I just love how they just come together, you know. And also, too, the so-called Jews, you know, the communities and stuff that the brothers talk about, creating our own communities, also in our hearts and in our minds. So what will help it in our heart is meditation and utilizing our magic, burning candles, our breathing techniques. As a matter of fact, there's a conference in Philadelphia Brother Noble Paz told us about. The sister talking about breathing. You know, definitely make that if you can. We're also going to be in Virginia for the Blackamoor Month, because y'all know Blackamoor History Month is coming up. So if you can, get into these schools, because this is a time where they are welcoming this type of stuff. You know, you go in there with your hair up on dashikis and stuff. You know, as a matter of fact, Grand Sheik Crystal, I know y'all in there. Goddess, you got to add on too before we conclude.
Peace, I'm here.
Yes, the sister is doing a satellite mission. She is right now planning how we can make things better for the youth. If you could just add on, Goddess, please.
Well, ultimately, my goal is to create home-based economics in reference to products that are chemical-free, so that our children don't have to worry about such things as fluoride and the other chemicals that are polluting our bodies, basically increasing their intelligence and making them more successful as they grow.
Mm-hmm. Fluoride,
just want to show them that, you know, not only did I not complete college, however, I am intelligent, but what I did was I completely decided that what I wanted to do was completely independent. I worked for people. I've been laid off twice. I've never been fired. However, I'm tired. I don't want to be laid off anymore, so I completely felt the brother where he was coming from, and I completely support that as well. I'm not saying don't educate yourself either. There are other ways of education, although I did go to several different schools and I have certificates and other things. You can put those things into your own businesses and build home economics at home, and I want the babies to know that, and that goes for my son and everyone else's son and all the sons out there.
Well, good, because my prayer is for all the sons out there, too. Sister, that was powerful. That was powerful. Please add on if you have any questions, comments. Now, see, that's the energy that you're going to be meeting in April with their grand opening. Could you break that out, too?
True. The grand opening is just going to be an event. It's a gathering of family, not just a gathering of my family, but our extended family, meaning all of you. You are all invited. I plan on feeding everybody, and that's the best way to bring my family to me, is to let y'all experience my cooking, my art. We plan on raffling off some of my blankets. I make homemade blankets, pillows, T-shirts. We are also opening a store in reference to the temple as well. We'll be giving away gift bags from the store. We plan on doing a lot of charity work as well through the temple, as far as having, you know, soup dinners throughout the month, you know, giving out clothes to the needy and just, you know, bringing people in and just educating them and giving them the knowledge that they need to succeed and go further in this life and further us as a people.
I love it. On the same team. Ooh, I love it. Okay, that's powerful. Yeah, people are coming. And y'all can also start getting y'all raffle tickets now. That'll be powerful. You definitely want them hand-knitted blankets. The goddess is off the chain with that. T-shirts, all of that. Beautiful. So any other things that you wanted to add on?
No, I'm just loving the food I got this evening. I'm just loving the food and loving the information and just absorbing everything from everyone.
Good.
So they're going to have their website up soon. It's going to be the temple. Family been asking where is the temple in that area, so they manifesting it. They building up. So if you're getting inspired, then, you know, just let us know. Hook up with us on the website. It's Dr. Aleem Elbay. Some people have been forgetting the Elbay. That's E-L. That's the masculine force and power. Dr. Aleem Elbay.com. And hit us up with your questions. We'll respond. Brother Realtor and L, you got anything else you want to say before we close out, God?
Yes, sister, Goddess. As I say again, as far as dealing with foreign currency, anything like that. Well, when you're talking about China, China. This is the reason why the U.S. corporation is in debt to China, because their currency is backed by gold, and the U.S. is not. So they're in debt with them. That's why I stress the emphasis on silver and gold. That's the key to our economic success. That's all I have to say on that note.
Okay. Well, that's truth. That's true. So get your gold with us, family. You know, $50, you'll get $125 worth of silver. $100, you get $250 worth of silver. It's just that easy.
Okay.
So hook up with us. We got a conference call this weekend, Friday and Sunday. So we're making it available. We're going to show you how to create dough. It don't get no easier than that. All right. Peace, love, light, honor, and respect to everyone. And we'll see y'all Friday.
All right. Peace and love.